Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Greetings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, the Alpine Avalanche, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading from the Big Bend Sentinel. Pilots, schools, and scientists come together to fight coronavirus. By Stephen Paulson, May 13, 2020. Far West Texas. Doctors, scientists, schools, and pilots have formed a new collaboration, the West Texas 3D COVID-19 Relief Consortium, to fight coronavirus, and in Presidio, the school district is pitching in. The group is using 3D printers to make personal protective equipment, and then pilots get it to small rural hospitals and other facilities like nursing homes throughout the vast West Texas region. The group so far has done at least one local supply flight in the Tri-County to the Big Bend Regional Medical Center in Alpine. Through the consortium, the other consortium originally started in Lubbock. The efforts have spread. It has picked up volunteers as far away as Presidio, where Cruz Tovar, a guidance counselor at Lucy Rede Franco Middle School, is using the school's 3D printers to make supplies. The idea started at Texas Tech, where, even before the pandemic, the university was already building relationships with its sister school, the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. "We're always looking for ways to coordinate activities," said Simon Williams, Associate Dean for Academic Affairs at the School of Medicine at TTUHSC. "The future of medicine is in tech." "Then the whole coronavirus started hitting," Williams added, "and we realized there were some problems with supply chains." The schools took a look at the pre-existing relationships between medical and engineering students and started thinking about whether we could do something for our healthcare workers, Williams said. The answer, it turned out, was yes. The budding group realized they could use 3D printers to make personal protective equipment. They started building relationships in the region with anyone who has who had the devices. "The category includes school districts," Williams said, "which often have 3D printing activities like robotics classes, but weren't using the devices right now." Much of the group's work has gone toward making plastic face shields, but they're also making other supplies, from intubation hoods designed to protect healthcare workers while they intubate patients to ear adapters you can use to make face shields fit better. Then came the pilots. A group in Lubbock pointed out that if you need to get something to a small community 100 miles from a major city, it's much quicker to fly there, Williams said. Two flying groups, Angel Flight and West Texas Aviators, have since come on board. The group has ballooned to include the local DA's office in Lubbock, which is using its vans to make local drop-off supplies, and pretty much anyone sitting at home with a 3D printer, Williams said. "It's just amazing how people have stepped up," he added. The efforts have been uniting communities that are normally separated by vast stretches of land, said Chris Stanley, an associate professor of art at the University of Texas at the Permian Basin, who has also joined the efforts. UTPB has helped distribute the plastic used in 3D printers, as well as tutorials on how to use the devices to make face coverings and other medical supplies. Stanley describes efforts in the Trans-Pecos and beyond as the southern flank of the consortium. "If places like Presidio and Brewster County can become self-sufficient producers of medical supplies," he reasons, "it'll help the whole region, not only in the event of a larger outbreak here, but by keeping much-needed materials in nearby cities that are currently having outbreaks, like El Paso." "I don't think anyone has ever connected these communities together between all of us," Stanley said. "Sadly, it took coronavirus to get those relationships built. Now let's hope those relationships stay intact." With the goal of creating a southern flank, Stanley started reaching out to Presidio ISD. One of his former students, Ramon Deanda, had worked at the school. Deanda helped connect Stanley with Tovar, the middle school guidance counselor, who started working with the school's school district's technology director, Larry Quintana, to make masks. Tovar helped to get students involved in the efforts, but realized it wasn't feasible. Still, Tovar estimates he and Presidio ISD employees have managed to produce around 150 to 200 plastic face masks and other pieces of personal protective equipment, which they've distributed to local entities like the Port of Entry and Presidio EMS. They'll soon be sending another 100 masks to Marfa, he said. We are grateful that our community was considered by Dr. Stanley's team, Tovar said. A lot of people forget we're part of West Texas sometimes. His goal, he said, was to provide for our local agencies, which I think, again, are somewhat neglected. The West Texas 3D COVID-19 Relief Consortium is part of efforts across the country and state to get non-medical workers involved in fighting coronavirus. That includes everything from seamstresses making masks to a chocolate factory near Houston, which is now using the plastic typically used in packaging to make masks, Texas Tribune reported. The outlet compared the efforts to those during World War II, when those not directly involved with combat helped make supplies. Nor is the consortium the only group in West Texas that's helping to make supplies. Sul Ross State University is also using 3D printers to make PPE. The school announced in a news release this week, working with groups like the Alpine Public Library. In an interview Wednesday, Williams, the associate dean at TTUHSC, said this consortium wasn't directly involved with the Sul Ross efforts, but that they would be reaching out. West Texas is so vast that there are probably many other groups that are working in the same vicinity as us, he said. It would be good to communicate with them. Government. Coronavirus delays elections and reshapes campaigning for Texas 23 in Marfa. By Abby Perot, May 13, 2020. Presidio County. May 2nd came and went with no votes cast for the three Marfa City Council seats up for grabs. Later this month, May 26th will pass too, without Presidio County and their fellow voters across Texas casting ballots for primary runoffs. Instead, both elections have been pushed back due to concerns that polling places might become vectors for the spread of coronavirus. Governor Greg Abbott, in one of his coronavirus-related orders, allowed local governments to delay elections. Marfa will not vote in three council members until November 3rd, leaving the three incumbents seated for another half a year. And the hotly contested congressional seat in Texas' 23rd district, currently held by the departing Will Hurd, has a Republican runoff now scheduled for July 14th. Entering the Texas 23 Republican runoffs are Tony Gonzalez and Raul Reyes. But how does one safely campaign across a district that spans from the outskirts of El Paso to western San Antonio in a time where coronavirus is flaring on either side of the district? Candidates have had to figure out how to digitally duke it out, since social distancing and previous stay-at-home orders have driven candidates away from traditional town halls, campaign stops, and debates. Democratic nominee for Texas 23, Gina Ortiz-Jones, is running her campaign with the November election in mind, hosting virtual town halls, contacting potential voters via email, and spending a lot of her efforts talking about COVID as it impacts topics such as small businesses, Native American populations, rising domestic violence, veterans, and border health care. Meanwhile, Republican runoff contestants Gonzalez and Reyes are going head-to-head until July 14th in the hopes of facing off against Ortiz-Jones in November. Reyes called the first month of COVID tough for his campaign. You can't do town halls. That wasn't going to happen. Instead, Reyes went to social media. We are doing some town halls and Zoom meetings. Anything we can do, we can to stay in contact while being sensitive to the times we're in. The good news is that we're slowly opening up Texas. Even so, we are wearing a mask and making sure we are staying cautious. Canvassing, hosting events, and shaking hands have long been integral parts of campaigning. And Reyes and Gonzalez both mentioned June as a date they might begin in-person interactions again. Gonzalez said most campaigning has gone from in-person to being on the phone and online. Though his campaign has traveled a few places across the district in recent weeks and will be doing a volunteer effort at a food bank this week. We will continue to add campaigning and events in a safe way, Gonzalez said. While Ortiz Jones' campaign has honed in on coronavirus conversations, and Reyes said the virus has only heightened his commitments to border security and the need to manufacture things in America, specifically in his district, he says, Gonzalez said coronavirus hasn't really impacted his platform at all. It has hit pocketbooks for constituents and potential donors, however. Reyes said it has been a challenge getting donations, as many have lost work during the lockdown. Initially, putting fundraising on hold, the campaign now has picked up its fundraising presence. With the understanding that times are a little tough, we are grassroots, so a lot of folks are donating 5, 10, 15 where they can, Reyes said. It's definitely harder, but we are fortunate. Hitting fundraising goals is more difficult in this environment, Gonzalez said, but the generosity of many people and our own hard work is getting us there. His campaign has still been able to raise over $1 million. Gonzalez, who finished in the initial primary and is endorsed by Representative Hurd, has also been collecting endorsements from established Republican names and grassroots conservatives like third-place finisher Dr. Alma Arredondo Lynch. I have support from grassroots conservatives like Dan Crenshaw and Sid Miller, and mainstream Republicans like Will Hurd and George P. Bush. By earning the support of both Will Hurd and Dr. Arredondo Lynch, candidates who ran against each other in the GOP primary in 2018, I am showing that I can fully unify the Republican Party to win the seat in November. Reyes is glad not to have Hurd's endorsement, since the Texas 23 Republican has often run counter to President Trump during his time in office. Instead, Reyes draws a line of Hurd Republicans versus Trump Republicans, saying a vote for him is a vote for the Trump side, rather than Gonzalez's alignment with Hurd. Reyes has challenged Gonzalez to a debate, though he hasn't gotten a response as of yet. In the more localized City of Marfa elections, candidates have all but ceased to campaign. Incumbents Buck Johnson and Yosef Ben-Yehuda both said they were not currently actively campaigning. For Johnson, Ben-Yehuda, and Natalie Melendez, their campaigns are at least visible in the sense that their current positions on council afford them a place on Zoom, while they continue their public decision-making on behalf of the city. I think it's a good way we all get to show our true colors in a public forum, Ben-Yehuda said. For the other two candidates vying for the three seats up for grabs, visibility can be more of a struggle. Stephen Bolter and Eddie Pelares were hoping to get seats this month. Now they will have to wait a half a year for their shot. Pelares will mostly avoid face-to-face encounters with potential voters, instead relying on posters, some Facebook, and maybe some phone calls. He said his campaign is basically on hold until a couple months before the election. That's okay with him, though. I know we have some good councilmen now, so I don't have any grief about it, he said. I'm just going to wait my turn. I'm enjoying retirement right now, but I'll get in there whenever the time comes. The extended terms for the three council members, Johnson, Ben-Yehuda, and Melendez, mean the council will have the unexpected opportunity to work on another budget together. Johnston called that rare opportunity. The current council members have been through the budget cycle together already, and it gives us a second opportunity to do that, Johnston said. We're familiar with the budget, and we're familiar with each other. We have that historical knowledge. Pelares also said the election delay was the right thing to do, mentioning elections in other states that proceeded despite coronavirus and ultimately resulted in further transmission of the virus and extremely depressed turnouts. Ben-Yehuda pointed out that the November delay could actually result in a higher turnout for city elections, which will now align with the 2020 presidential and congressional elections. When elections were delayed, Governor Abbott said all options were on the table in response to questions about expanding vote by mail, which would reduce contact that could transmit coronavirus. In response, Texas Democrats pushed for expanding vote by mail through the courts, a requirement for a voter to have a sickness or physical condition in order to qualify to to vote by mail could be expanded to everyone who fears contracting coronavirus, one lawsuit argued. Lawsuits are now volleying back and forth, with judges in turn saying more voters will and will not be able to access mail ballots. This week, a handful of organizations filed together to claim that certain Texas voting rules are unconstitutional in light of a public health crisis like a pandemic. It remains to be seen where vote by mail lands for Texans come July or November. Voting in the July 14th runoff will be at the County Annex Building in Presidio and the USO in Marfa. Voters can vote at either location during early voting, which the governor has extended to due to public health considerations. Early voting lasts Monday, June 29th through Friday, July 10th. On voting day, precincts 1 and 7 will vote at the USO and 2 through 6 will vote through the annex. Workers wearing masks, available hand sanitizer, and social distancing of 6 feet are all likely precautions at polling sites, according to election clerk Florcita Zubia. The clerk welcomes other ideas that will help make voting sanitary and safe for all Presidio County voters. Culture. Local art is experienced from new perspectives during global pandemic. By Abby Perot, May 13, 2020. Marfa. If Marfa is a fabric, art institutions are woven into it. Judd Foundation Board President Rainer Judd said at a recent city workshop. The digital meeting was called to discuss the eventual reopening of hotels, motels, and short-term rentals to the tourists that bolster the local community. And in Marfa, a great share of visitors come for the art. With the coronavirus changing the way physical spaces operate, from now through the foreseeable future, the Big Bend Sentinel spoke with three Marfa art institutions about their closures, adjustments, and still distant reopenings. "We've been really redirecting ship, which is interesting," began Sarah Melendez, programs director at Ballroom Marfa. The institution was exhibiting Lange Lange by Solange Pessoa in March when concerns of coronavirus caused businesses to close their doors to the public. Though the exhibition had been a vibrant shoulder-to-shoulder opening in November, its late May closing shows just how much has changed this year. Ballroom will host a free digital screening of landscape film Roberto Burle Marx, directed by João Vargas Pena, on May 16th at 8 p.m., utilizing the Ballroom Marfa Film Channel on streaming website Vimeo, a complimentary event to Lange Lange before it closes on May 24th. Melendez explained, "Our major efforts right away when COVID happened and the gallery closed was launching a new website. We canceled everything through August, quite a few programs, and we were able to refocus. It was all hands on deck." The institution is rehoning in on our mission of commissioning new work with artists, Melendez said, focusing on larger integrative commissions. And with physical art being so tied in to in-person visits, Ballroom is lucky to have a deep history working with musicians. In one project, the organization is commissioning DJ composers and producers to come together to create a sound library. With 20 composers from Mexico and 20 from Texas, it's a cross-border collaboration that Ballroom will have mixed into an album and eventually host a live performance, hopefully in 2021, Melendez said. Ballroom is thinking of ways to engage our audience that's not in Marfa, rather than drawing them to Marfa, Melendez said. Though Texas museums are officially allowed to reopen, according to the governor, we have no plans to open up, said the program's director. Jenny Moore, director of Chinati Foundation, said, "As a public institution, to be closed to the public is difficult but necessary. First and foremost, for the safety of staff and community, and then of everyone else," she said. Their education department has pivoted to new online programming that regularly engages participants through its Instagram account, @Chinati@edu, and has put together art material, packages for pre-kindergarten through 6th grade students in need of supplies available for pickup today, Thursday, from 9 a.m. to noon outside the school auditorium. In an eventual reopening, the foundation is reimagining visits to Shinati's 340 acres, perhaps occurring outdoors and offering a different perspective on the architecture and outdoor works found on site. Like Ballroom, Shinati has just launched a new website that makes information and imagery more accessible. These institutions, along with Judd Foundation, are adding resources, online conversations, video, and other content to continue to connect with patrons from afar. We have developed partnership events with organizations, including Museum of Modern Art, to make content available to a global audience and free of charge, Rainer Judd said. Their now postponed or canceled community programming has always been free of charge, but the foundation is expecting a sizable hit to their bottom line due to loss of guided tours at both their Marfa and New York locations. But with all the pivots toward the internet, the foundation is also looking to connect with people in other ways that are not digital. Judd Foundation is also taking time to focus on planning for building projects here in Marfa, exhibitions, publications, and the future of our programs, according to Judd. For these three institutions, a return to normal is distant. Although tourism in the area, such as parks, the observatory, and other local wonders like Marfa Lights existed prior to Judd, we do feel a responsibility to lead in regard to those who come to Marfa for Judd, Judd said. It is important to us to follow local health official guidelines to protect our community, which, as you know, does not have the medical resources to handle a spike in the COVID-19 cases arising from an increase of visitors to the area. The local institutions are in communication about reopening, though none have firm plans, together or separately. I think the reason we do what we do is we recognize that the art is a fundamental part of our lives, Moore said. Especially in times of hardship, people turn to art for solace. A global pandemic just may force local art to be experienced from new perspectives. Moore said, the spirit of flexibility, creativity, generosity, and openness maybe not literally, is going to be the way forward.
Hello, this is Sonia reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Tuesday, May 12, 2020. Three more COVID-19 cases out of quarantine, 9 now recovered. 2 cases from El Paso County now out of quarantine too. Pecos County received some good news on the COVID-19 front, with 3 more Pecos County cases now listed as recovered by the state and out of quarantine. In addition, 2 cases from El Paso County that tested positive in Pecos County also have cleared quarantine. Pecos County has 20 confirmed cases. 9 of those are now recovered. To date, 353 people have been tested in Pecos County, with 225 negative, 102 pending, 20 confirmed, 6 confirmed and assigned to another county, 11 active cases, and 9 recovered. None of the confirmed cases were hospitalized. All of the active cases are connected in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice's N5 unit, be it an offender, employee, or a family member. On May 9, 72 TDCJ employees and their family members were tested at PCMH Saturday. Another 54 were tested on May 12. On May 8 in Ira Ann, 22 people from the general public were tested by a National Guard mobile testing unit. Those results are pending. Another 41 were tested by the National Guard 2 weeks ago in Fort Stockton, with all coming back negative. Pecos County confirmed cases. Here is a list of confirmed cases from Pecos County. Case number 1, 54-year-old woman was tested at Malik Medical Clinic on March 27. Her test results came back from a private laboratory on April 4. Exposure source not determined. Quarantine over, listed as recovered. Case number 2. 50-year-old male was tested at Malik Medical Clinic. According to Schuster, the man is listed as a close member to case number 1. Schuster said he could not provide additional information on the relationship. Quarantine over, listed as recovered. Case number 3, a male listed in the 65 to 70 age group. He reportedly came in contact with case number 2. He was tested at Malik Medical Clinic, quarantine over, listed as recovered. Case number 4, 49-year-old male was tested at Malik Medical Clinic. Schuster did not have the test date. He is an employee at TDCJ N5 in Fort Stockton. Quarantine over, listed as recovered. Case number 5, 39-year-old male tested at Malik Medical Clinic. Source contact not released. Quarantine over, listed as recovered. Case number 6, offender at TDCJ N5 unit in Fort Stockton. Quarantine over, listed as recovered. Case number 7, 47-year-old female is self-quarantined at home with her husband. Test was done by PCMH. She is an employee at TDCJ N5 in Fort Stockton. Case number 8, a 37-year-old woman tested at Pecos County Memorial Hospital. She is an employee at the TDCJ N5 unit in Fort Stockton and has been connected to case number 6, an inmate at the state prison facility. TDCJ N5 unit in Fort Stockton. Quarantine over, listed as recovered. Case number 9. A 35-year-old female tested at Pecos County Memorial Hospital. She is an employee at the state's TDCJ N5 unit, making her the third case tied to the site, joining cases number 6 and number 8. Quarantine over, listed as recovered. Case number 10 is a 39-year-old male who tested at National Guard Mobile Unit in Fort Stockton and is quarantined at home with case number 9. Quarantine over, listed as recovered. Case number 11 is a 59-year-old male who is in home quarantine with his spouse. He was tested at Pecos County Memorial Hospital on April 27. Case number 12 is reported as a 28-year-old female employee at N5. She was tested April 29 at a National Guard mobile testing unit in Mertzen. She is self-quarantined at home. Case number 13 is a male offender at the N5 unit who was tested April 29 and is in isolation cell. Case number 14 is a 53-year-old female employee at the N5 unit. She was tested at Malik Medical Clinic on April 28 and has been quarantined at home. Case number 15, 45-year-old male employee at the N5 unit. He was tested May 3 at PCMH, self-quarantined at home with family. Case number 16, 39-year-old male, possible contraction from case number 11, tested May 5 at PCMH, self-quarantined at home. Case number 17, 67-year-old female employee, tested May 9 at PCMH, quarantined at home. Case number 18, 48-year-old male employee at the Lanao unit and spouse of case number 7, tested May 9 at PCMH, quarantined at home. Case number 19, 64-year-old female employee at the N5 unit, who was tested May 9 at PCMH, self-quarantined at home. Case number 20, 37-year-old female employee at the N5 unit, who was tested May 9 at PCMH, self-quarantined at home. In addition, 4 employees of the N5 unit who tested positive May 9 at PCMH will be assigned to El Paso County per the Texas Department of State Health Services. They are listed as 3 males, ages 24, 23, and 33, and a 27-year-old female. 2 people from El Paso County who tested positive at Pecos County Memorial Hospital and quarantined at a home in Pecos County. Quarantine over, listed as recovered. These cases were assigned by the state to the tracking totals for El Paso County. Fort Stockton High School aims for outdoor graduation ceremony on May 22nd. Virtual ceremony will be created as a backup plan. Barring any unforeseen setbacks, the Fort Stockton High School Class of 2020 will walk the stage for graduation as scheduled at 8 p.m. on Friday, May 22nd, albeit on the football field of Panther Stadium with social distancing and a limited number of guests allowed. Superintendent Ralph Trainum, FSHS Principal Roy Alvarado, and district staff are now tasked with coming up with a plan for the graduation, which will include assigned alphabetically seating for family members on the home side of the football field with socially distanced seating, a limit of possibly 4 members allowed per family, separate entrances for parents and students, state-required health screening of anyone entering the stadium, arranging the graduates 6 feet apart on the field, and requiring all to wear cloth masks. Adding to the challenge, the state is not allowing a rehearsal. We can pull off a stadium graduation, Trainum said. The school board for the Fort Stockton ISD held an emergency meeting on Monday, May 11, to consider the 2020 commencement ceremony for Fort Stockton High School. Amid technical glitches with the Zoom and Facebook Live feeds, the board ended up not taking any action. Instead, the board members fleshed out the four options for graduation ceremonies allowed by the state TEA. The district will go ahead and create a virtual ceremony as a fallback should the outdoor event not be able to be held due to a change in restrictions at the state level. With everyone on board with the outdoor ceremony option, no formal vote was taken. The task shifted to fleshing out the details. The graduation ceremony does not require board approval, but given the COVID-19 pandemic, the board held a special session in case opposing views merited a deciding vote. Four more confirmed cases linked to TDCJ N5 unit after 72 staff and family members tested Saturday at PCMH. Pecos County has its 19th confirmed COVID-19 case after testing of 72 staff members at the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, and their family members on Saturday, May 9, found four confirmed cases. The tests were done as a drive-through at Pecos County Memorial Hospital. Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster released the results Monday night. Pecos County now has 13 active cases and 6 recovered cases. All 13 active cases are linked to the N5 unit, with offenders, staff, and family members among the positive tests. 2 of the recovered cases were also connected to the N5 unit. None of the cases have required hospitalization. The number could increase later this week as PCMH is holding another drive-through testing for TDCJ staff and family on Tuesday, May 12. In addition to the 72 tests done at PCMH Saturday, 22 were done Friday, May 8, by a National Guard mobile testing unit in Ira Ann. Those results are pending. Another 41 were tested by the National Guard 2 weeks ago, with all coming back negative. The results appear to affirm the call for Saturday's testing, which was initiated by Schuster in talks with the TDCJ. Schuster worried that inaction could lead to a rapid increase in cases at the N5 unit that had the potential to overwhelm medical resources both inside and outside the unit. About 208 employees and contract workers are at the N5 unit, which has the capacity to house 606 offenders. The unit functions as a site for offenders transferring into and out of the TDCJ system. "We don't have hospital beds in Fort Stockton to handle a major outbreak," Schuster said. "We need to be proactive so we don't get overwhelmed. We can handle a few at the hospital, but 400 in one unit, no one can handle it. You'd be looking at setting up tents on the N5 unit grounds." As of May 11, 298 people in Pecos County have been tested, with 216 negative results, 61 pending, 19 positive, and 13 active. Coach stays. Ira Ann Sheffield ISD School Board takes no action on Athletic Director and Head Coach Mac Ludeek. Following a 90-minute closed session, the Ira Ann Sheffield ISD School Board took no action on the employment contract of Athletic Director and Head Football Coach Matthew Ludeek at its Monday, April 11 meeting. An agenda item read, "Take action as appropriate on Athletic Director's employment agreement." According to CBS7, nearly 20 parents and players attended the meeting, with all who spoke voicing support of the coach. On May 8, School Board President Steve Garlock declined to comment on the agenda item, citing confidentiality of personnel matters. Ludeek is in his first year at Ira Ann High School. He led the team through its worst record in school history, going 0-11. The football program also has record low numbers, suiting up as few as 12 players for a game while finishing another with only 10 players on the field. The district has seen a dramatic drop in enrollment and last year made extensive cuts to its budget and staff amid budget deficits. Ludeek declined comment on the matter prior to the meeting. An email was sent to Superintendent Michael Meeks this afternoon, May 8, asking if any complaints had been filed against Ludeek or if disciplinary action had been taken and is awaiting a response. A review of agendas for the board meetings found no such items. Meeks, who is retiring, will head his final two meetings on Monday, May 11, and Thursday, May 14. The board did not take action on hiring a superintendent. That is expected to happen at the Thursday, May 14 meeting. The lone finalist is Dr. Tracy Cantor, currently the Executive Director of Special Services in Ector County ISD. On May 8, the Pioneer sent emails seeking comment on the matter to School Board President Steve Garlock and Board Members Basil Ramirez, Margaret Holmes, Jerry Carter, Tori Cox, Jeffrey McMahon, and Preston Villanueva. Garlock responded via email at 4:45 p.m. I am not at liberty to discuss personnel with anyone due to privacy rights. The Pioneer is awaiting other responses and will update the story. City Council set to clear EDC assistance program for local businesses. The Fort Stockton City Council is expected to act upon a proposal by the Fort Stockton EDC to assist local businesses at its Tuesday, May 12 meeting. At its May 5th meeting, the Council had its first reading of the plan by the EDC to promote or develop or expand their business enterprise back to the level prior to the economic retraction caused by the COVID-19 national disaster. The proposal would provide grants of up to $10,000 per project and per business. The reading is a required step in granting the EDC approval. It will be up for vote at the Council's May 12 regular meeting. A maximum of $400,000 will be available through the program. I'm just very glad that our Economic Development Board has the foresight to try and help our local businesses, said Mayor Chris Alexander. We've been real fortunate that our economy has been as such that we have a little bit of money to be able to do that with. I know, checking on other towns, that they are not in position to do this for their citizens and businesses. In the interim, the EDC has rolled out the application so businesses may begin the process. If the Council approves this May 12 and we have applications completed and approved, we should be able to start cutting checks by the end of the week, said Remy Ramos, the EDC director.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, May 7th. Upcoming property tax bill won't reflect downturn in oil field. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. With the continuing decline of oil field activity and oil prices, property taxes for the coming year are not expected to change significantly and may even increase. Property taxes for 2021 are based on valuations as of January 1, 2020, before COVID-19 and the sharp decline in Permian Basin oil field activities. According to Ward County appraiser Norma Valdez, preliminary appraisal values were sent out at the end of April. The preliminary notices indicate that valuations have actually gone up, not down, as most might think. Valdez stressed, however, that these notices are preliminary and could change. Quote, several things could affect the final values. For example, some values were estimated before the rendering of some newer assets was added and was not available at the time preliminary values were sent out. Those individuals have until May 15th to get those renderings submitted. Secondly, property owners have time to appeal the appraised values before they become final in July. Last year we had 310 appeals, she said. Ward County entities serviced by the Ward County Appraisal District are Ward County, Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD, Grand Falls Royalty ISD, Pecos Barstow Toya ISD, Barstow, City of Monahans, City of Wicket, City of Grand Falls, Ward County Water District No. 2, and Loving County Water District No. 1 in Ward County. Grand Falls Royalty ISD is the only entity in the preliminary values that saw a decline in mineral values from the certified $200 million last year to a preliminary value of $150 million this year. Quote, there is at least one pipeline that has not been rendered yet. That will likely increase that valuation, Valdez said. Current tax rates for GRISD is 97 cents for the M&O budget and 36.7 cents for the INS. According to the preliminary valuations, local real and personal property is up by an average of about 3 to 4% over the final certified values from last year. Mineral, industrial, and utilities are up by more than 10%. As an example, Ward County, which has the largest valuations of any entity, local real estate, and personal property value for 2020, is $425.4 million. Valuation last year was $413.3 million, an increase of about 3%. Mineral valuations went up from $4.5 billion to $5.2 billion, up by about 14%. But with the appeals, these preliminary values will likely change, she said. After the appeal period, the certified tax rolls will then be sent to the taxing entities, who will then conduct their annual budgets and set tax rates. Final tax statements will be sent out by the Office of County Tax Assessor Collector Vicki Heflin in October. Currently, property tax assessments for Monahans Wicked Pyote ISD is $1.47 per $100 of valuation, 97 cents of which provides funds for maintenance and operation, and 50 cents for interest and sinking fund to pay for the $140 million 2019 bond approved by voters in May of last year. According to MWP ISD business manager Sarah Harris, the M&O tax rate will likely go down slightly for the coming school year. Quote, "The state has changed the funding formula, and the M&O rate will probably go down slightly. The INS rate cannot go higher than the current 50-cent rate," Harris said. MWP ISD Superintendent Chad Smith said, quote, "We are already set for the next school year with current valuations. We also have more than double the recommended reserves now, so we have adequate funds to sustain a conservative budget," end quote. The current tax rate for Ward County is 69 cents per $100 of valuation. Long term, County Judge Craig Hawley said, quote, "From the county side, the crash in oil prices will have a very significant effect on budgeting. We'll discuss that more as time goes on and as we see what prices do going forward. We have avoided debt at the county level, so that will help, but budgeting will be difficult. The final number is subject to change, so really I don't pay a lot of attention to the preliminary report," end quote. Last year, preliminary numbers for Ward County were $4 billion for mineral values, while the final value came in at $4.5 billion. The city of Monahans derives most of its income from the sale of water and sales taxes collected at a 2% rate by local merchants, so the city is less dependent on property taxes than the school or the county. Current property tax rate for the city is 33 cents per $100 of valuation. Noting that sales tax revenue is of greater concern, City Manager Rex Thee said, quote, "It's sales tax receipts probably going to be even worse than I said a couple weeks ago. The extra dollars won't be there, but we will continue to provide essential services. We need to open businesses back up," end quote. One very important thing that many people overlook is property tax exemptions, such as filing for a homestead exemption. Quote, "Check to be sure that you are getting all the exemptions you are entitled to, such as a homestead and the over 65 exemption. MPWISD does not assess any tax for individual property owners over 65, Valdez said. However, the deadline for filing exemptions for the current tax year was May 1st for this year, but verifying eligible exemptions could help lower your tax bill for future years. If the current sluggish market conditions in the oil industry remain into next year, the tax year for 2020 will be negatively affected, as a sharp decline in mineral values could cause those values to drop. Hair and nail salons, barbers, to open Friday. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Last week, Ward County began reopening businesses and local governments. Ward County offices resumed normal 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. hours on Monday, and restaurants were allowed to be in operating at 50% capacity on May 1st if they so desired. City Manager Rex Thee announced the City of Monahan City Hall will resume regular business hours starting Thursday, May 14th at 8 a.m. Quote, as the Phase 2 guidelines begin to open Texas back up, the city is prepared and ready to provide full access and service at City Hall. City Hall will practice social distancing with the designated standing areas at the service counter and in the hallway, as well as physical barrier separation between customer and employees. Quote, the city has been very pleased with the cooperation of our residents, businesses, builders, and contractors as they conducted business with the city by phone, drive-up window, and online during the time City Hall access was limited. The city hopes that customers continue to use these methods to conduct business and pay utility bills as a continued effort to practice social distancing to flatten the curve of the spread of COVID-19, especially if experiencing COVID symptoms such as cough, shortness of breath, and fever. City staff will wash and sanitize their hands and will regularly clean and disinfect common areas to protect themselves and customers. Feel free to call City Hall at 432-943-4343 before coming in if you have any concerns or question, Thee said. Other businesses will also be reopening. Texas Governor Greg Abbott said in a news conference on Tuesday that on Friday, May 8th, hair and nail salons, barbers, and tanning facilities can reopen to customers provided they maintain social and physical distancing between customer stations and that those in waiting areas are either able to maintain the 6-foot distance between them or wait outside. Abbott also said that stylists and customers are strongly encouraged to wear masks while services are being performed. Weddings, funerals, and worship services are also included in the most recent guidance as long as spacing requirements are met. Beaches, lakes, and rivers may be open to the public, but the same standards apply, limiting to a maximum of 5 persons per group and maintaining appropriate distancing from other groups. Graduation ceremonies have been approved with appropriate distancing being maintained. Additionally, gyms and other workout facilities will be allowed to open on May 18th, provided they operate under 25% capacity and that showers and locker rooms remain closed. No announcement was made regarding bars and pubs that are primarily alcohol-related, but Abbott said he was working with business owners to find solutions to allow reopening. Graduation ceremonies slated. Monahan's High School will hold graduation for the class of 2020 on Friday, June 5th. Graduation will be held at Estes Memorial Stadium beginning at 8 p.m. Gates will open at 7 p.m. Spectators will be required to wear masks and only clear bags will be allowed. Family groups may sit together but must maintain a distance of at least 6 feet from other groups. In the event of inclement weather, the event will be moved to June 6th at 9 a.m. Graduation details for Monahan's Education Center will be held on June 4th at Estes Memorial Stadium beginning at 8 p.m. Gates will open at 7 p.m. the same restrictions as the MHS graduation will apply. Baccalaureate services will be held on Sunday, May 31st at 8 p.m. This event will be held in the east parking lot, the home side of Estes Memorial Stadium, and will be a drive-up style ceremony with all students and family members remaining in their vehicle. Students will be given more information from both MHS and MEC administration. Ceremonies for Grand Falls Royalty ISD seniors will be held on May 23rd. Full details are expected to be available by Friday. Cullender Kindergarten will hold their graduation ceremony on May 20th, beginning at 9 a.m. When the child's class enters the one-way street on 11th Street, parents will let their child out at the first crosswalk near the playground. Your child will make their way across the crosswalk to the sidewalk on the north side of the school. You will pull up to the second crosswalk and wait for your child's name to be called. Once your child receives their diploma, they will get back in your car and you will turn right onto Leon to exit the ceremony. In the event of rain, the ceremony will be rescheduled. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Monahans News on May 7th. On Saturday, April 25th, Sandra K. Wilson, age 70, rose from her wheelchair for the first time since her stroke in 2008 and walked to heaven. She had been a resident of the Lamont Lusk Sanchez Texas State Veterans Home in Big Spring since 2012. Sandra was born at home in Wink, Texas, on March 5, 1950. In 1981, Sandra returned to her hometown in Wink and began 29 years of teaching elementary math at Wink Loving ISD. Sandra's parents were Calvin and Olita Wilson of Wink. She is preceded in death by her parents and her older brother, Frankie Carl Wilson. She is survived by sister Wanda Bond of Del Rio, brother Jerry Wilson of San Angelo, brother Royce Wilson of Marble Falls, and brother Glenn Wilson of Granite Shoals, Texas. She had five nieces and nephews. There are also four great-great-nieces and nephews. A memorial service will be held at a later date at the First Baptist Church in Wink. Harkey Funeral Home of Monahans will be handling arrangements. Galen Winkler, also known as Skinny Winkler, age 85 of Monahans, passed away at home on April 30th in Monahans after a short battle with cancer. Galen is preceded in death by his wife, Dora Lee Winkler, parents Frank and Zora Winkler, sisters Ovi Kennedy and Lana Wise, brothers Leonard Winkler, Troy Winkler, Deward Peanut Winkler, Raymond Winkler, Joe Winkler, and Aiden Winkler. He is survived by his daughters, Barbara Bingham of Monahans and Donna Bivens and husband Ronnie of Brant, Texas, sons Danny and wife Nancy Winkler, Richard and wife Annetta Winkler of Monahans, sister Zella Glover of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and brother Billy Winkler of Odessa. He is also survived by six grandsons, two granddaughters, 70 great-grandchildren, and very special friend Gail Burks, many cousins, nephews, nieces, and friends. In lieu of flowers, the family would like donations to be made to Dora Winkler Memorial 4-H Scholarship, Ward County Livestock Show, or donation of your choice. Orlando Ortiz Garcia, age 55, passed away peacefully on April 29th. He was born in Kermit to Antonio and Olivia Garcia on August 12, 1964. He is survived by his parents, Antonio and Olivia Garcia of Kermit, his loving wife Raquel Garcia of Monahans, children Priscilla Garcia of Monahans, Daniel Garcia and husband John of Colorado Springs, Colorado, Dominic Garcia and wife Sarah of Odessa, Alyssa Garcia and husband Brian of Round Rock, Texas, and three grandchildren. Also by brothers Robert Garcia, Oscar Garcia and wife Connie, Rodolfo Garcia and wife Sylvia, sister Dolores Nunez and husband Umberto, all of Kermit, and numerous nieces and nephews. Visit our website, harkeyfuneral.com, to sign the guest book or leave a personal note for the family. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Harkey Funeral Home. Double murder suspect arrested in Juarez. The story was written by John Fulbright and Rosie Flores, staff writers with the Pecos Enterprise. A man wanted by police in connection to an October double murder was taken into custody by U.S. Marshals Service deputies last Wednesday in El Paso after being arrested by Mexican police in Juarez. Arturo Gallegos, age 48, a fugitive wanted for double homicide, was captured on April 29th, Pecos Police Chief Lisa Tarango said in a news release the following day. Quote, "A lengthy six-month investigation into the whereabouts of Gallegos involved investigators from the Pecos Police Department, Texas Rangers, Reeves County Sheriff's Office, and the U.S. Marshals Service Lone Star Fugitive Task Force, which culminated in his arrest," she said. According to the newspaper El Diario del El Paso, Gallegos was detained by law enforcement authorities in the state of Chihuahua in Mexico, where he had been hiding from U.S. authorities. Gallegos had been living in a house located in a Juarez neighborhood called Praderas del Sur, where officials found him and transported him to the Isleta port of entry in El Paso by Mexican agents. The report from Pecos Police said that Gallegos, who was identified by the Marshals Service as Arturo Gallegos Ortiz, was then processed by Customs and Protection officials without incident and then turned over to the Marshals. Gallegos was being sought in connection with the October 24, 2019 double homicide at a home on Mesquite Street on the east side of Pecos, where officers found the bodies of a man and a woman. Officers considered Gallegos Ortiz a suspect in the case a short time after the bodies were found, but were unable to locate him in the Pecos area. Quote, "We did have information that he possibly had absconded to Mexico, and we shared that with other entities," she said, "including the Texas Rangers and the U.S. Marshals Service on this side of the border, while law enforcement in Mexico also was alerted that Gallegos might be in their area." Authorities said Gallegos was arrested without incident by Mexican authorities and is currently in the custody of the U.S. Marshals Service. Quote, "He is being held on a federal parole issue," Tarango said, adding she expected Gallegos to be returned to Pecos sometime in the next 30 days. Police were called to a home at 815 South Mesquite Street shortly after 8 p.m. on October 24th, where they said a person arrived at the house and reportedly had discovered the two bodies. They were identified as Isabel Christian Hernandez, age 44, who lived at the home, while the male victim was Reynaldo Ramirez, age 79, who had an address out of Austin. Police at the time speculated Gallegos might try to flee to Mexico, while also having ties to the Midland-Odessa area and Lubbock areas. His vehicle was found at the residence when officers arrived, and Tarango said 4 days after the murders that there were no other suspects in the case. Gallegos has had past run-ins with area law enforcement. He was arrested but was never prosecuted 20 years ago in connection with a body discovered east of Pecos by Ward County Sheriff's Department deputies. He and a second man, Mario Hernandez Navarrete, were charged in the death of Ruben Garcia Tercero, whose body was found near Barstow Dam in Ward County on May 20, 1999, after he had been reported missing in May of 1998. Charges against both men were later dropped because of insufficient evidence, 143rd District Attorney Randy Reynolds said, and a third man, Joel Bravo Rubio, was indicted by a Ward County grand jury in 2002 in connection with Tercero's death. Hernandez's family has previously suffered a tragic death. Her son, Timothy Soto, was found dead on January 25, 2013, after being reported missing on September 20, 2012. His body was discovered in a Camaro, which was discovered to have crashed in an isolated area in West Odessa in Ector County. Quote, "My heart goes out to their family. They've suffered a great loss with their son and now with her," Durango said.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texans. This is the Recording Library of West Texans, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.